This is Dig and Swing, a volleyball podcast for everyday coaches. All right, so I am joined by Alexis Lebedew from, you're from Australia, but you are in Singapore right now.
Mm-hmm.
You've gone to the Sydney Olympic Games, which is so badass, might I say. And you've done work in the NCAA. So you work a lot with the Australian Institute of Sport. I actually watched a little bit of your, the thing you did on, that you posted the video recently about your kind of like a moderator of it. And it was about, was it gymnastics and swim? And you were talking about player development. So right now you're working on your PhD in, athlete and coach development, huh?
Yeah. It's, when I go through my resume, I seem to change jobs every 4 years, which apparently is when I kind of get restless, I guess. So it means that I've got a broad range of things, which is good because a lot of different things interest me. So it's been a fun thing. But and even in your introduction, just got me thinking about things. The previous job I had in Australia was with working with gymnastics, which is the first time I'd ever worked with gymnastics. And the philosophy there was we want someone that knows a lot about athlete development, knows a lot about coach development, knows a lot about data and data management and systems. We're confident that we know enough about gymnastics. And so it was a really fun environment from that perspective because it meant I had the opportunity, and in fact, part of the reason I was employed was for an outsider's eye and things. And my boss, who was fantastic, I always like asking questions. So I'm just curious. So, okay, so why do we do that? Okay, so why does that happen? So, oh, why do you do it like that? And my boss would always say, and then there'd always be a point where I'd stop asking questions or the answer would be because that's what we've always done. And as soon as it was that's what we've always done, we'd both just look at each other. Ah, okay, we need to put that one aside and follow up on that later. Because sometimes what we've always done is okay, right? But if that's actually the answer, then that means that you've got to investigate it, because that's where I think a lot of the things that are in your mind come from. And it's what someone saw someone else do. And so the answer as to why isn't good enough.
I love that. That's I think that's actually a pretty good way of describing what I'm trying to accomplish here, which is that because that's the way we've always done things. And I started coaching about, I don't even remember how long, it's probably been about 15 years ago. You know, I coached the way I was coached, and that's because it was the way that things were always done. And I still see that even now, you know, 15 years later, it's like, well, you know, we've always done this passing drill because this is the only passing drill I know of. There's more
to it though, because we've always done this passing drill because this is the only one we know of. And we know that it works. We know that athletes get better doing this drill. And that's the coaches don't do things that obviously don't work. They do things that work. The challenge is usually, okay, yes, that works, but if you did it like this, you would improve passing and also serving. If you did it like this, you would improve passing and also serving and also setting. If you did it like this, then the athlete will retain the information better rather than having to repeat it for 3 months. And so the challenge is getting coaches to be okay. And a big part of my job is to recognize that coaches aren't crazy. They do things because they think that they work, and often they do, but do they work? Are they the most effective that they can be? And the biggest limitation coaches always talk about is time. Oh, if I had more time, I'd be able to do more. And so we've got to switch that around and say, you don't have more time, so can you do things more efficiently? Can you do two things at once? Can you do one thing that will achieve 10 things? And that's the compelling argument.
I actually like that a lot more than me just kind of passing judgment on people, which is, I have a tendency to do that.
I've been involved in volleyball for 40 plus years, and I don't know when I learned some things. I don't know how I learned some things. There are things that I think that I, how could anyone else not know that? And then I'm like, oh, there's plenty of reasons why someone didn't know that. They didn't grow up in a household where your dad was involved in the sport. And so it's been, so okay, that's actually a question. So the answer is this. And so it's really actually helped me recognize the range of different skills and the different needs that people at with different levels of experience have.
Yeah, that's, I almost feel like I'm in a therapy session right now, because that's one of the things I feel like I'm banging my head against a wall sometimes, where I'm like, why are we doing it this way? Like, that is not a good enough argument. And I like that it's, you know, coaches, you know, it's the challenge is asking them, okay, well, you could do it this way, but if you do this, you can avoid this in the future, or you can retain this information. And it's kind of like a, you know, you can, I don't know. I think that's been my biggest challenge, is just feeling like that I'm just at a brick wall with people, with the things that they do. But,
and that's where the responsibility falls back onto the coach, because the coach has to be curious. To improve in what you're doing, you have to be curious and you have to ask questions. And sometime the person asking the questions has some responsibility in the way they do it. But ultimately, if you're not prepared to listen and assess things, then that's where you can get bogged down. To me, the perfect example is two-person pepper. And I remember working out 20 years ago, I was like, hang on, you never hit directly to where a defender is standing. You never dig exactly back to where the hit came from. And you never set a ball that's coming straight to you back in the same direction. And I was like, oh, so why do we do this? And then 20 years later, I realized, okay, why we do this? We do this because of space. Because space and neat, coaches like neat. Two people doing things and five lines all on the same side of the court. Everything's neat and controlled, and so it looks good, and coaches don't like things that don't look good. And when I was coaching beach volleyball pre-Sydney Olympics, and one of the players, both the players were former NCAA players. One was a two-time All-American. And one of the top couple of players in the world at the time. And so I stopped doing pepper because in theory it made no sense. And after a while, she came up and said, look, I know what you're saying. I understand what you're saying and I agree, but I just don't feel like I've warmed up unless I've done pepper.
Huh.
And that's when it was like, so it's learned behavior now. So right. Coaches do drills that aren't necessarily the most effective for what they think is happening. Athletes learn to rely on them as part of their actual mental and emotional preparation, and everything just keeps going forever.
I never thought about that, about looking at it as a matter of space and just the way it looks.
Coaches don't like chaos.
It's so true. Yeah. And it actually makes me think of a drill that I know some people do where they pass back and forth, like partner passing, but in sync. And, you know, I'm as type A as they come. I love order, but there's something about it. Just like hurts my brain going, when is this going to happen in a game? Like, you are never going to have this in a game.
But you're right though, because I've done that drill. I love that drill. And there's a feel, I even get that feeling right now. It's almost goosebumps of when there's just this quiet and there's just like a single bounce every time, single sound. And it's so cool. It's not useful.
Right. Yeah.
It's probably not the best use of time.
That's a better, much nicer way of saying it's a waste of time. I like that. I'm just going to have to tell myself that. So what are some of the most ridiculous things, and maybe even more common things that you've seen that we need to stop telling people to do?
The thing that jumps into mind is run.
Yes.
I was coaching in Humboldt State University, and we were not a strong team. But yeah, that is what it is. But at training, we didn't train hard, and so at one point the head coach and I asked the question, so what do we need to do to get you to train hard? And there were a couple of the players that said, oh, make us run. You need to make us run if we're not playing. And my heart just dropped, because again, that's learned behavior. There's no reason that anyone would think that, unless it's something that's being reinforced over time. And so the idea that so again, it comes back to running works and fear of punishment works. As a motivator, we know there's intrinsic, there's extrinsic. Sometimes people don't have the intrinsic desire to do what you want them to do, and an extrinsic mechanism will help. But again, it's the long run. In the long run, what's it gonna take? And so rather than doing a drill which doesn't engage the athletes and then getting frustrated and making them run because they're not doing it properly, why not change the drill? Why not find a way to engage the athletes? And that's the and that's really hard, because if you've got 10, 12, 15 athletes on one court and you're trying to engage all of them, you're a way better coach than me if you can do that all of the time.
Right.
But that then changes the blame. It changes the blame game. All of a sudden, it's actually my responsibility rather than their responsibility to do what I say. And so the whole idea, I think this is another one that's been on VCT a few times, is about whose responsibility is it to have learnt. Is it the athlete's responsibility to have learnt something, or is it the coach's responsibility to have taught it? And I remember there was a discussion about that a while ago, and the passion the passion and the defensiveness of coaches about saying sort of, well, I've told them how to do it. It's like, what else can I do? Well, I don't know. Yeah. And you know, some people might not learn it, and that doesn't make you a bad person or a bad coach, but it's not their fault.
Right.
You can't, as a coach, you don't have the right or the position to say it's their fault, because your job is to coach them. And part of that is teaching them things. And so it's such a just that whole, well, they just don't listen. It's like, as soon as a coach starts saying they don't listen, then yeah, it's probably not that the athletes aren't listening. It's probably because you're not saying anything that they want to hear, or that they're, or that's interesting. The idea of doing these massive punishments, again, is it your most effective use of time? Is it teaching what you want them to teach? I actually, and it's a pity BJ isn't here, because I'm sure he'd argue against me, but I quite like punishments, right? And I will do, it'll be something, and so, okay, you have one crunch or one push-up. And so it's used as not a physical penalty. It doesn't take the person out of the drill, but I find, especially with developing athletes, they don't really realize a lot of the time what's happening. And they might hit five balls in a row out, and one ball out is fine. Two balls in a row out is fine. It happens. Three balls, four balls. There's a point at which you've got to, you know what, you've got to realize what's going on, and you've got to pull back a little, or you've got to think of things differently. And if it looks like the person's just doing the same thing five times in a row and for the same outcome, then that's a small reminder. It's like, step out, do a crunch. It takes 3 seconds. You're not out of the drill, but it's pointing out something that needs to change. And so I find those things quite valuable.
Yeah, it's kind of like hitting the reset button a little bit.
Yeah, it is.
Well, we're kind of on the same page, because I actually I coach a lot of 14-year-olds and younger, so I coach a lot of little kids. And I actually I have my kids are not like the kids that I train, whether it's through lessons or camps or whatever, they're not allowed to say, I can't, I'm sorry, or my bad. Because a lot, especially at that age group, it's a lot of error, because they're learning. And so I don't want them to feel like they're terrible players and they're terrible people and they're letting everybody down. And so, so what we'll do is if they say it and I hear it, I'll go, all right, one push up. And then they'll go down, do a push up, and then that's it. And it's funny because they'll actually hold each other accountable. They'll say, hey, she said, my bad. And then they're like, oh, okay, I gotta do a push up. And I even do it too. Like I'll serve a ball at them and I'm like, oh, shoot, I'm sorry. And then they'll yell at me, hey, Sarah, you need to do a push up. I'm like, yeah, you're right. I absolutely do need to do a push up. Yeah. That's the only time and my other favorite is the yeah, but. So, when I, let's say a kid does something, she hits it out of bounds, but all we're focusing on, did you, take last two steps, jump up straight up in the air and not, broad jump too much into the net. And she does it, but she hits it out of bounds. I'll go, hey, that was really great. Great job going up there with 2 feet going straight up. And she'll go, yeah, but I hit it out of bounds. And then that's two pushups because I gave them a compliment and they decided they did not want my compliment. So.
Yep. But it's really valuable information too, because she's telling you that that's the only thing that she cares about.
Right.
And that's what her focus is. So all of the technical information that you might be giving her beforehand, she doesn't care.
Right.
Which she's not really listening and she's not really trying to make changes. She just cares about whether it goes in or out. I was coaching an athlete. It was I coached her from about 13 to 20, and she's playing in the States now, and in preparation for heading to the States, we're doing some one-on-one stuff, which I don't know how coaches do it in America. I find one-on-one so difficult to make it interesting.
Yes.
So I'd create these drills where she had to serve to a certain spot, then run in and pretend to defend and then transition to something else and then run into set, then set a ball, then cover, then I'll toss another ball. And so a whole sequence of things. And so afterwards, how was that? This was wrong. And as like I said, I've been coaching her for at least 5 years at this point. I was like, okay, so from now on, you have to say something positive before you're allowed to say something negative, something you were happy with. And she couldn't. So there'd be entire sequences where she couldn't think of anything positive, so she didn't say anything. And it was just such a – we're so corrective as coaches, and athletes are as well. And sometimes we teach that also. But it blew my mind how difficult it was for her to feel that something was good. And so we worked a lot on that.
I don't do one-on-ones. I always bring somebody with me. So it's like one kid is the focus, but I also have other people there to facilitate, the drills to make them just slightly more game-like. Because I'm not going to work an hour on just tossing a ball to a player to set, because that's not going to happen in a game. Even if I am by myself, I'll make that player toss a ball to me and I'll pass them at least a ball so they can, not get such a nice and easy toss. And, it's one of those things that I see, coaches, they do a lot out here. They do a lot of lessons. It's a lot of one-on-one lessons
And parents want it too. Cause it's one-on-one is better than one-on-two, because that's half the attention. And it blows my mind. I find it really hard to do one-on-one sessions.
Oh,
because it's like, if you want things to be game-like, then it's really hard to do.
Right.
And so I don't quite get that, but it's definitely, it's a very American thing.
We also don't like science or silence. The coaches don't like the gym to be quiet. And when you have only one player, that player is going to get overloaded with our feedback.
Okay. All right. Here's one of my favorite stories. So this is too long ago. Super, super talented 6'8" kid, whatever reach 360, whatever. I don't know. I don't know how many feet that is. Not super coordinated, but one of those people that looks athletic because they're fast, but actually not particularly good at learning skills. Anyway, I was the lowest of the low coaches in the national team at the time. I was basically a volunteer coach, and everyone else was doing their work, and so I had the young kids on a different court, and I had a setter and a hitter, and this guy was the hitter. So we were just working on some stuff, and I just read In a Game of Tennis. So I was getting very In a Game of Tennis-y. I was trying not to give too much feedback. I was just focusing on the one thing, just letting it go. And then everyone else finished their training. We were still going. And then so the next lowest of the low coach came over and was watching, and then started giving some feedback on top of the feedback I was doing, something different. And then the next coach came across and started giving feedback. In the end, there were five coaches, all giving the same kid who's not great at learning new things to start with, all different bits of information on every hit. And I'm not sure if I walked away. I definitely stopped giving feedback. I think I was just tossing balls to the setter. But it was just like, but it's really hard as a coach, because you see something and you want to help and you want to change. Conversely, I did the same thing. I was working on just a particular type of serve, so a beach serve that just kind of sits up and then drops deep. And I was working with a very experienced player, again, trying to get very in a game of Tennessee and not doing too much. And we were doing it for a fair while, and it just wasn't making any difference. And I was focusing on, I think, the hips or the contact or something. And then the head coach came over and said, "Hey, why don't you point your left foot over there more?" And she did. And the next five serves were great. It was like, oh, so much for the inner game of tennis. I was just so it was honestly, I was devastated. I really was. It really hurt that coach was just fantastic at those sorts of things.
I think
it's something we've been doing with my college team now, not mine, but the college team I'm working with, is we're asking the players, we'll give one focus in the drill, and it could be one focus for each player. So if I have four players that I'm working with, player one is doing this, player two is doing that, and it's amazing how you can remember what every player is working on in that drill. And what we ask them to do is, if they perform the skill, the one focus, and they want feedback, they can say yes or no. Yes, meaning I did it right. No, meaning I didn't do it. And when they say yes or no, that means I want feedback. So then, as a coach, if a kid says yes, and then I can follow up with yes, that's all the feedback that's needed.
One of the most fun projects I've done is with a guy called Dr. Dan Greenwood, who's now, I think, head of high performance at University of Memphis or something. And it was a long-term project on coach communication. So how can coaches communicate more effectively? And that we just put together this simple, we talked about the contents and then he did the work. And it was just, okay, so you've got to convince coaches. So there's got to be no science talk, but there's got to be science study. So it's got to be irrefutable. So it's not an opinion. It's actually based on research. And one of the many studies was just a simple one that said that athletes who ask you question first, so it was athlete asking a question, just giving feedback or nothing. The athlete that asked a question first retained the information better. Okay. The athlete that received nothing was actually in the long run better off than the athlete that you gave feedback to every time. And it doesn't mean that it happens with every athlete all the time, but it's just got to make you think. And if it doesn't make you think, then as a coach, then you're probably not going to improve or sort of beyond where you are at the moment, and if you're happy with that, then I guess that's fine. But again, it's the questions, and it's the space, like you said, and it's the allowing there to be no noise. One of my other favorite ones, I think it was my brother maybe mentioned once, was so if you've got a group of 12 players and you yell out some feedback, how do the players know it's related to them? And so if you start thinking about the idea of saying the name first and then the feedback, you realize how often you've given feedback and no one's paid any attention at all. You're just creating noise. But when you say the name first, it's like, okay. And then you realize, oh, if I didn't say the name first, they just would have kept on walking in the direction they were walking. And it may or may not have made any difference whatsoever.
Well, how about the case where you give feedback, you know, in the exact scenario that you're talking about? You've got 12 players out on the floor. You give feedback to one player, and it's the opposite feedback that somebody else needs. And so they hear you say it.
Yeah.
They hear you say it to one player, and they go, oh, I must have to do that too.
Yeah, yeah. And it comes back to your scenario. You've got four different players working on four different things. It's so – changing behavior is so hard. It always kills me when people talk about, oh, well, you can't teach the same technique because people are different and you just make them robots. Like, I've never made anyone a robot. I'm not nearly good enough to make someone a robot. I guess I kind of joke about, but I wish I was good enough so that everyone would all have a really good platform that'll look the same. But then again, if you dig deeper, the drills I do don't require that. So they're not incredible. Like, you see these drills which are incredibly precise, and people have obviously done the same drill for hours and hours, and all of the athletes in the club or whatever look exactly the same. And it's like, oh, that's why. That's the whole worry about people being robots. It's actually the drill that created that. But if you have an open drill, then you end up with everyone looking a little bit different. There's reminds me of a story, again, working with the senior men's national team in Australia, and a lot of scrimmaging. There was a younger player who, we do these drills where we play on a super high net, and you had to to get out of the drill, you had to hit a kill over the block into the back corner. And so it was really focusing on hitting high, being bigger, and he would just be horrible. And he'd never get out of those drills. And in scrimmages, he wasn't a starter. So it was always starters against non-starters. And again, I was the bottom, the volunteer coach, basically. And I remember at the end of a couple of weeks, I just went over and said, hey, just so you know, I've noticed that you keep winning, that your team keeps beating the starters. And he just kind of shook it off and said, yeah, well, hopefully other people notice too. I said, they will. You just need to keep doing it and they will. And his team would just win. He never hit over the block, but he always hit off the block. And after a while, I realized, maybe even a couple of years later, I realized he is unbelievable at tooling the block, just really good. 15 years later or 10 years later, I said to him, hey, you remember those days in those drills? You weren't even trying to hit over the block, were you? You were just tooling it all the time, weren't you? He's like, yeah, but and you never got out of the drill. I said, no, I was just kind of working on that though, because that was what I was interested in. Oh, my God. And he was one of the most successful, like, 10-plus-year career in Europe and that kind of stuff. So it was just – but he – to go back to the point before, he was working on something. He knew what he was working on, and he didn't need feedback every time to do it, to become great at it, because he wasn't getting feedback every time.
Right.
But it's that internal thing. And I guess to get back to the coach's influence, sort of how you want to not distract that. Find out what that is. Another story, I spent – three years working with a couple of athletes that were former college players, one of whom in particular, if you asked a question, then she wouldn't know where to begin. And it took 2 years to break through the first question. First time you asked that, okay, second time it's they'll repeat words that you use back to them because they think that's what you want to hear. Then they might start to use their own words. Then you're actually engaging in a conversation. And in my experience, it takes about 2 years to get to that point. Anyway, we're beyond that. And we were working on something specific at training, and she wasn't doing it. And I was about to kind of point that out. And then I suddenly thought, hey, why did you do that? I suddenly became curious and I wanted to know, because I figured there's probably a good reason, because she's really a good player. So I asked her why she did it, and the answer was pretty good. I was like, that's cool. And I was like, you can do that as a coach.
Yeah.
You can learn from the athletes, and that's the video that you mentioned earlier, Sarah, that I was part of earlier in the week. There's a lot of conversations about that, about learning from the athletes. And to learn from the athletes, you need a trusting environment, and they need to be able to put what their thoughts are into words, and that takes time.
Right. Yeah, you're not going to be able to do that making them run all the time, and you're not going to probably get the feedback, like a safe place for that feedback from the players. I love getting feedback from the players. I mean, there's obviously a line to it, but I'll ask them like basically the same thing. Like, what were you thinking on that? Or what was your thought process on that? And they'll tell me, and I'm like, okay, all right, sure, whatever. I guess that works. It's fine. Like I thought I saw something different. And I think that's like, it's a good ego check because we don't know everything. And sometimes our players are trying to do something and, they actually have the right thought process, but I don't know.
Yeah. You know what else is really good feedback from players? When they're not interested in the drill.
Yes.
The best drill I ever created, smartest, cleverest drill I ever created. I was so proud of it. I still am, even though it was a miserable failure. And it was just too complicated. I ran it for the first time. I was so frustrated. No, this is really good. It was a darts drill, I called it. Because I was at university, I got into playing darts in the bar a lot, because in Australia, drinking age is 18, so there's bars in universities. Anyway, so what I did is, one of my favorite darts games was Mickey Mouse, which I don't know what it's called, but it's, you got to get 320s, you've got to get 3 bullseyes, 3 triples, and then after that you start scoring points until your opponent catches up. So I worked out, okay, so top level volleyball, out of 21 points, or whatever it was probably 15 at the time in beach volleyball, out of 15 points, 7 of them are from side out kills first phase, 2 of them are from side out kills second phase, 2 are from aces, 1's from a block. And so I set up the game like that. So you had to get all of those things before you could start scoring points. And so that was the game. And I still think it was great. But the players just did not engage with it, and they were just playing. I said, but you need to get another side out point. You had an opportunity there. I was like, I don't even know what's happening, dude. So, but learning from that, the concept remained the same, because some different analysis that I did was on, I was looking at our team. So what are some areas in our teams that we can work on? So I looked at one of our teams, different ends. So I just, beach volleyball, you can easily break down into ends. Indoor volleyball, you can easily do it with technical timeouts or anything you want, really. And I looked at different ends. So how is their serving? How is their passing? How is their hitting? How is their blocking defense at different ends? And I was like, okay, there's not a huge difference. And then I thought, okay, what about if I look at matches won and matches lost by different ends? And then matches won, at the fourth end, I think it was, their serving was consistent all the way through. Matches lost, their serving basically went down to zero. They're like, no more aces after the fourth end. It's like, oh, okay, that's interesting. And so that then kind of became the darts drill. And so we did a lot of drills where you couldn't start scoring points on your end until you'd served an ace. And so it was just really using that trigger at in each, just repeatedly that trigger every end. I've got to serve aces. I've got to serve aces because I've got to get my ace at this end because that's how I get the advantage from the other team.
Where does the term end come from? Is that a cricket term or is that a what is that?
Beach volleyball.
When you're talking about an end, what do you mean by an end?
Well, you switch ends every, at the time, 5 points. So first,
okay,
second end.
Okay, I got it.
Yeah, sorry.
No, that's okay. We just had a different... we just call it a switch.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, we'd say end.
Okay.
Yeah. So...
Neat. That's what we're going to start calling it here.
creating a drill and getting feedback from the stats, creating a drill. It's way, way off topic, but I'm sure there was a reason that story came to mind.
Oh, we were talking about feedback from players, but then, you know, feedback from
players, yeah.
That's what happens. Yeah. It's like, we want to talk about one thing and then it morphs into seven other podcast episodes. So it's totally fine. It's why it takes me so long to edit podcasts. Cause I'm like, oh, I should probably save that for later. I should save that for another episode. Well, Alexis, thank you so much for coming on this podcast. I really appreciate all of the feedback that you gave us.
I tend to talk too much in these things, so my apologies if I did and go off on tangents, but I really enjoy these things and I think they're really valuable. So awesome. Very, very happy to participate in anything I can talk on pretty much any topic.
Same.
On some of them. We were here for you today. We wanted to hear what you had to say. So this was great.
Yeah, absolutely. All right.
Appreciate it, but I've been around.